Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today we're going to have Dark Journalist on, and he's going to talk to us about what dark journalism is. His name is Daniel Liss, and he calls himself Dark Journalist. I think he's the best. I just love this guy. He's on Tuesdays and Thursdays on the same network that I am on the Global Star Satellite Systems at the same time, just Tuesdays and Thursdays on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. But I love this guy, and he talks about dark journalism, essentially the stuff the media won't cover because it's off limits. The off-limit topics of the mass media is his forte. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the off-limit topics of the mass media and what's going on with those issues, the deep state, the secret space program. It's a really interesting conversation. But before we get into that, I want to tell you that I just launched my second book called First, Meet the Inventor of Blockchain. It's about the person who conceived and patented blockchain first in the world. And you'll learn all about it. It's not who you think it is. And if you go to my website, sarahwestall.com, you can read about it and learn about what it's about. I also have Wrong Side of History. That one's starting to sell pretty good. And again, I don't care if it sells. If you don't have money, I'll send it to you for free. It's so important. It's about the Syrian war and what's really going on. I think the war would end today if people knew. So I have two books now, and I really encourage you to go look at them. What's so cool about First, and I just really felt compelled to write it and get the information out there. So many people who come up with inventions are not credited for their inventions. I mean, history is riddled with that. And this person, Kels Wilson, who originally came up with the idea, of course, he's not getting mass credit for it. And I'm trying to get that word out. This guy has 5 degrees, 2 doctorate degrees, an MBA, a master's in electrical engineering. This guy is an interesting person. He was in the Air Force and is a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. He is a patent attorney. He has his Juris Doctorate in patent law. And he's represented multi-hundred million dollar projects. He's a really interesting character. He has over 41 patents, including some that are under government secrecy. And he has many more that are patent pending. He's an interesting character, and this is what that book is about. And it's dedicated to all those inventors who were not given credit to their inventions. So I really recommend you checking that one out. And if you know anybody who's interested in cryptocurrencies or the whole blockchain world, I think they would enjoy that book. But we don't have that much time. Since the interview will take most of the hour, let's get into that interview now with Daniel Liss, Dark Journalist.
Hi, Daniel. Welcome to the program again.
Sarah, it's great to be here.
I'm really glad that you're back. We have a ton to talk about, and you've always been doing your own journalism, but now you're breaking out and you're doing pieces that are really focused on your journalism instead of just interviewing people. You're going for, and this is what you've always been as a journalist, and now you're coming forward and you're doing a lot more of that type of work. So can you explain, and I know we've talked about this before, but can you explain what dark journalism is and how you're going about doing this?
Sure, absolutely. I coined this term dark journalism, and that's why I call it darkjournalist.com, because there are so many areas that when you're in the mainstream media, you can't go into. And I spent a lot of time in mainstream media, and I got to see those choke points of information over and over again. And there were areas that you couldn't go into, certain types of housing fraud, certain types of advanced technology, things around the military and UFOs. And I started to realize that you're going to need an approach that has to be outside the box. And when I looked into alternative media, say 5 years ago when I was starting out, I didn't see much on the alternative side that was appealing versus what was happening in the mainstream. They had better issues, but there wasn't as much vetting and filtering. They didn't have the resources that you'd get in a normal newsroom. So I decided dark journalism would be somewhere where I would go into those spaces and get the information that the mainstream couldn't go into, and especially, you know, around areas in politics, advanced technology, and things along this line, the black budget, for example. And I would employ the kind of research and vetting and real principles that were missing in a lot of the alternative stuff, which very often goes by without a review process. And, you know, when people screamed fake news after the end of the last election, that was just the mainstream media trying to shut down all these different outlets. But at the same time, there was this strip, and we can see it in our Facebook feed every day, of these stories that just come up that aren't true, you know. That the Pope has a twin or something. So that's what I call dark journalism, which is to go into these areas. You have to adopt something that's different than the mainstream media, because they're just, if they're told to avoid a subject, they will. But at the same time, you need something a little more robust than what I was seeing in independent media. And I think we're getting somewhere now.
Being a professional journalist in the areas that are essentially off limits to the mass media.
Exactly. Yeah. See, I should have you writing my bio. Same.
Well, that's why as you know, I reached out to you about 3 years ago now, and I was just really impressed with you and how you approach these topics, is bringing that professionalism into this genre, because that's what it's needed. I mean, that's what journalism really needs, is going after the areas that, I mean, that's what we're all about, what our country is about, is you need to go after the dark areas and uncover that. And yes, people need to hear about that. And you need to do it with professionalism so they can trust you and trust what you're putting out there.
Yeah. And also, that's a really good point. And I really appreciate that, by the way. And I definitely, you know, and I get a lot from listening to your show also, because I think that you're going in there and talking to the experts, and you're using this kind of approach again, which is using a lot of research. And, you know, that's so important, I think, because you want people to be able to take something that the mainstream media would throw out. You know, for example, if we'd have said even 5 years ago that, you know, there was a large center in Bluffdale, Utah that was sucking up every piece of data from your emails, your cell phones, and, you know, your computer use, everybody would have said, oh, boy, you're paranoid, complete paranoid. And then Snowden came out and it's all true. And then everybody gets on board. You know, the culture moves. And then the media is not stupid in this sense. They might be manipulative, but they're not stupid. When they see the culture's caught on, you know, they stop denying and they get on board too. And they're like, all right, well, we have to start to cover some of this stuff. They're under pressure. And that's the kind of pressure I think we want the alternative media to put on the mainstream media, which is if we get the story and we verify it, you know, whether it's around hardcore topics around politics, things that, you know, would make average people wonder, you know, UFOs, whatever it happens to be, advanced technology, and some of the more conspiratorial nature that goes into, you know, the deep state and a number of factors that control the country and the finances. I think that we can get, you know, if we can get the information out, the mainstream media is compelled to hop on board and take a look. And even if they aren't, we can bypass them completely and go right to our audience.
Which is really great, because it's becoming pretty obvious to a lot of people that the mass media is purposely leading people astray or purposely not covering things that are important for people to know.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, the modern era of that started with the Kennedy assassination. And, you know, I've studied the Kennedy assassination. I'm so steeped in the literature and the researchers on it. And you have some of the best people, like Professor Peter Dale Scott, who coined the term the deep state. You know, he put out his first book on the Kennedy assassination in 1968. We're almost 50 years later, and he's still writing in depth about the deep state, you know, whether it's around 9/11 or Trump and the CIA. These things all are related. But I'll tell you, there's something about, because the original fake news from the media came, that era came about during the Kennedy assassination, because it was so obvious that something totally different was going on, than what they were presenting. And this set up a kind of a schism, you know, a schizophrenia in reporting, because one thing was on the ground people could see, and then the media was reporting this stiff story about a deranged Marine who shot the president, you know, who just happens to get a great job on the motorcade route, you know. And it is fascinating that we're talking about this, because Putin recently made a very interesting comment saying that, you know, we're aware that the CIA, you know, there's certainly a good deal of information that the CIA had a hand in the JFK assassination. Unbelievable bombshell in the middle of her interview. And Putin said this as a very clear signal, saying
to Megyn Kelly.
He did, yeah. Yeah, and it was a fascinating reference, because the Kennedy assassination is kind of like America's big secret. And there's a Russia piece to this, which is when we go anti-Russia, anti-Russia, anti-Russia with the media, you know, like, I'll play a game with you. You know, you say Trump, I'll say Russia. You know, that's the NLP game that's going on in the media. But why? Why would, you know, suddenly we be so anti-Russia? And there's a number of factors involved with why we need an enemy. And a number of reasons why, you know, Russia won't come into the global digital currency. They're banning GMOs. So we have a number of reasons at a deep level that we have to go to war with them, or at least a Cold War. And I think that Hillary actually promised them Cold War 2.0, which is what they thought they were going to get. And they thought they were going to get Hillary. And Trump really has no desire for Cold War or Hot War 2.0 with Russia. It's not going to happen. And they're missing out on this huge enterprise of money. But the reason I brought the Kennedy part in is because, you know, this whole setup that we're in now is based on the original historical action that took place, where Kennedy set up a back channel with Khrushchev, and the CIA didn't like it. They wondered what he was discussing. And he would send people who would meet other people, and they'd send notes back and forth to diffuse tensions during things like the Cuban Missile Crisis. And this is one of those reasons why they wanted to eliminate Kennedy, because they wouldn't be able to fulfill all these Cold War tensions and Vietnam and a number of things. But Russia did their own investigation, and this is what people don't realize. The KGB had their own investigation on the Kennedy assassination, and they had a really good reason for doing it, because the hawks in America were trying to pin the assassination at the time, if you read the newspapers, on Russia, saying what was a KGB plot because Oswald had lived in Russia. And this is the strange thread that we're still seeing, the deep state operating with this idea of there's a Russian, you know, they're always trying to set up Russia. There's some strange pattern, I think, that we can follow there.
Well, we almost have to rely on Putin being mentally stable and strong.
I know.
You know, because
yeah,
we're both nuclear powers, and it scares me because we're doing a lot. It should scare everybody. We're doing a lot of things to provoke Russia.
Yes.
And so we are dependent and reliant on Putin right now being mentally stable, being strong, being able to understand that our country is doing things for reasons that might not be to raise war, but to, you know, political reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really dumb.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I definitely agree. There's no geopolitical advantage to baiting them. But there's a small group of moneyed interests, like we were just talking about, around GMOs and around the military-industrial complex. And, you know, one of the things that I talked about with Professor Scott was how we were renewing this whole class of nuclear weapons. They're too old. And the truth is, without a nuclear enemy, there's no reason to do that. Now, they've already approved $1 trillion. Now they're looking for a second trillion. So how do you do it without a nuclear enemy? There's no real reason to upgrade all those weapons. You need a much smaller amount of weapons that will, you know, never get used. So, you know, if you don't have a nuclear enemy, then you're never going to realize the big benefit of all this money coming in. So they need to create this static with Russia. I don't think there's any question about it. But I think we're looking at a very dangerous situation in America, because they're talking about even some of the mainstream journalists are starting to realize there's no Russia story. So this thing, keeping it alive and independent counsels, now we found out that the reason a special counsel got called on the Russia inquiry into Trump's campaign action with them was that Comey leaked a memo directly to a Columbia law professor. He's instigating a false thing. They can actually remove this special counsel. He's not a special prosecutor yet, but he's a special counsel who's on the investigating committee. And that makes a hassle because as political, you know, the sharp guys in politics like Dick Morris, Pat Buchanan, and this ilk, they know that a special counsel, their job is to find something because they get millions of dollars allocated. And if they come up with nothing, they look ridiculous. So they have to find something, you know, and that's not really trying to hamstring Trump's presidency the way that the deep state is operating that way, and particularly the CIA. The CIA has never been more anti-president, except probably with Kennedy. And that's where I think the Trump-Kennedy parallel holds up a lot.
Yeah, because people don't like to compare Trump to Kennedy because they're comparing their personalities and who they are as people, yeah. Right? And when people are comparing Trump to Kennedy, that's not what you mean by that. You're meaning more where they are from a deep state geopolitical standpoint.
Yeah, because both Kennedy and Trump have a lot of money, right? And so Kennedy came in and he was the equivalent of Bill Gates becoming president. They were incredibly rich. And that meant that the influence was different. You know, their influence. They had their own power base coming in. And Trump is the same type of situation. What it means is he can deviate from the plan. You know, I mean, Obama couldn't deviate. He still had to bomb Libya. He still had to do all these things, even though he was supposed to be a Nobel Prize winning liberal Democrat.
Peace activist.
Peace activist. Community organizer. And you're going to, you know, bomb Libya, so it's unrecognizable. So, you know, you can't. Those forces, a lot of liberals were very surprised by that too. And I don't blame them because, you know, here's this guy who came off as a big liberal Democrat and he goes in and he takes on a big war stance. But I think what we're looking at with Trump is Trump has his own idea. He figures he's totally unique because he's a business leader who became president, complete non-politician. Now, we had Ross Perot run like that in 1992. And it was a big deal because he talked about the deficit and they made fun of him. He talked about NAFTA and they made fun of him. But as soon as NAFTA kicked in and GATT kicked in the 1994 Uruguay round, we all found ourselves out of a job if you were in different cities.
And he was right. People realized he was right.
Yes. So I think this was, you know, Perot's revenge when Trump gets elected. And I do think that Trump has caught on very fast in the job, and he's doing a lot better, I think, than the media portrays him. The only scary moment, I think, with Trump was when they had this kind of false flag chemical attack in Syria, and he was compelled to bomb a runway. But there wasn't any damage except to the runway. They called them in advance to tell them what was happening. It was a strange thing, but I think that might have been sort of a token to the deep state that, you know, because that's what they want is to go into Syria and have a war. And you've done a lot of shows on this recently. I think you've done an excellent job of covering this issue. It's a no-win solution, I think, from Trump's point of view. And I think that's one of the reasons that they want to remove him.
Well, what do you think about the billion-dollar largest arms deal agreement with Saudi Arabia? And to me, that's a little disturbing, right? Because we know Saudi Arabia is one of the most brutal regimes on the planet.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things that Catherine Austin Fitz, who's the former assistant housing secretary, she comes on the show a lot. And one of the things that she says is that they have kind of a shrinking pie. And they have to figure out how to keep the game going now that the debt growth model is over. So they can't just keep printing money. And we've already seen the Federal Reserve raise interest rates a little. So the old game is over. But so how do you get money going now? Certainly arms deals become a major piece of that for the deep state. And one of the, I think, there's three or four principal funding methods that the deep state uses. And the deep state will use drug running. They'll use guns, I think, is certainly a major part. They'll exploit issues in the black budget. That says they'll take money out of public funds for shadow projects. And the fourth one is the secret space program, which is a major topic for me. It's certainly one of the key areas for any of the work that I'm doing. And the secret space program, I have to say, is the least known method. You know, people will probably know that there's a black budget. They know that there's some strange connections to intelligence and drug running. And they might know that arms deals are some very often viewed as a payoff. But they don't know a whole heck of a lot about the secret space program.
Well, let's talk about that. And one thing that I want to say is that it's so great to have you on and talking about what you're doing, because people probably don't realize when you're doing these interviews, you do so much research behind it. Your questions are so insightful. And that's one thing I notice is that it takes a lot of research to ask questions like that.
Yes.
So, yeah, I know that you're really putting, and so when you come out and you talk, people get to see how much research goes into what you're doing. And one of the things that you're doing now is that, which I love, is you're coming out and you're talking more and you're doing more of your own reports. So people get to see this research that you've been doing, and they get to see you do your own exposés, which is great. And you've recently done this with some characters in the secret space program.
Yes.
And if you could talk first about what the secret space program is and what it's the intent of what your work has been on that, and then talk about some of these other characters that you've been doing some reporting on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And no, I really appreciate that, too. One of the things that you mentioned there about doing research around interviews, too, is I would notice at times that really great people would come out to be interviewed, and that the interviewer couldn't get much out of them because they didn't know the material very well. So I figured right off the bat, you know, we're going to have to know everything about this person and what they're presenting in order to get them to really open up. And I think we do that quite well. You do it well on your show, I can tell you that.
Thank you. it's a lot of work, isn't it?
Absolutely. One of the things I would say about this, the Secret Space Program in a nutshell, I'll give you the kind of short version of it. So, there were a number of leaks that were coming out about a lot of different programs going on in space, construction, you know, resources being allocated up there, something called a space fence. And the space fence was originally an idea to block all the junk that was hanging out in space from entering the atmosphere. That was its ostensible purpose. But there were a number of things that went into that, just like with Star Wars, the idea to build something that could zap missiles from outer space as a cover for other things that they were working on. So, you know, Star Wars came up in 1984 under Reagan, and this is one of the things that brought the Soviets at the time to the table, and Gorbachev, and he negotiated the nuclear reduction. But I think in space, there's so much, it's so hard for us to get information that these little leaks were all we were getting. There's some kind of program going on that's beyond our comprehension. You know, it's beyond the normal things that NASA would do, sending a probe out or something. Now, what happened, I think, it was 2002, was when Gary McKinnon was a hacker, and he was in the UK. And he was a young guy, he was in his late 20s, and he hacked into NASA. And while he was in there, he was a UFO buff, really. He was looking for information about UFOs specifically, and he couldn't find it. But he came across something, which was an off-world officers list. And it listed a number of people involved in as fleet officers, the same way that you would cite a Navy fleet. These guys were off-world officers. Now, nobody knew anything about that. We'd never heard anything like that. This was totally original information. And it was quite believable because the U.S. immediately wanted to extradite McKinnon for hacking into NASA. And they went very publicly and loudly to get him. And interestingly enough, it turned out that McKinnon had Asperger's. And they couldn't, because of an obscure rule in the U.K., they couldn't extradite him. They continue to try, but they basically have failed. And, you know, if he were to set ground at foot on ground in the U.S., they'd grab him immediately. So now people who are watching this closely noticed also that he came up during a press conference with Obama and Cameron, who was the prime minister at the time. And they had to discuss him, and Obama, sort of deferred the conversation over to Cameron. And so this shows you the level of McKinnon and his hacking and what it was and how much they wanted him, the same way in a sense that Assange, that we really want Assange so badly. But in this case, they wanted to know what else he saw. So rumors of the secret space program really blossomed because they had something concrete. This guy had hacked in there and seen this off-world officers fleet. It made sense. Suddenly, all the leaks and all the whistleblowers started to make sense. Now, from there, we saw a lot of people looking into it from a research angle, you know, saying, well, what are the opportunities that are going on in outer space? So like space tourism or space mining and things, asteroid mining. You know, there were all these different industries that were building up out there. But at the same time, the NASA budget was shrinking down to nothing. Now we're at 1965 levels, which is amazing. There's no impressive space program in the public arena, but the private arena, as you interviewed the CEO from SpaceX, they're engaged in this a lot. Robert Bigelow, you know, Bigelow Aerospace, they're planning these huge ships that would hang out and be, you know, entertainment in outer space. Now, Bigelow, by the way, also caused a big controversy on 60 Minutes last week by saying he already believes that alien life is visiting Earth. So he's one of the first to
He came out. I saw that interview, and he came out and he says, there's not a doubt in my mind. He goes, I've personally experienced it. He didn't go into it. He didn't want to go into it, but it was interesting to hear that. Did you hear NASA coming forward and saying, and this isn't really, the alternative media didn't catch on to this, but they made some comments that possibly life started on Mars, like as humans.
Yes.
And we came to Earth later as the atmosphere changed.
Yes.
They actually came forward and said that.
That is fascinating. They also, they're starting to open up a little more. They talked about the possibility of life forming in some of these oceans on one of these moons. We are seeing a little bit, but it's so behind what they know, right? There's a guy who was part of a team at NASA in the 60s, and he came forward at the disclosure conference in 2001 that Stephen Greer held, and he talked about all the photos that they had of different bases on the moon. Now, this is hard for people to swallow, because what would that stuff be doing up there? Who put it up there? And because we had just, you know, we just got there ourselves. So there's a lot of information that they won't even, you know, if there is an off-world civilization, they don't want to tell the regular populace about it. Every once in a while, I think they test the waters. And it's funny that we were talking about Catherine Fitz, because she made a very interesting, she has a very interesting story about some period during the 90s, 1997, being invited by a Navy think tank to study the idea of impact, the announcement of the impact of extraterrestrial life visiting Earth, and what that would be and how people would take it. And she said, oh, you know, I'm thinking about it. I'm on the fence. And the admiral who contacted her said, would you like to have lunch with an alien? And this is her story. And, you know, Catherine is about as good a witness as you're going to get. And she was thinking, such an odd thing to say. I'm not going to accept.
She's worried that she was being set up as being goofball. Yeah,
yes, exactly. But nonetheless, it's a weird story. And she did wind up joining the think tank. You know, one of the guys who was on the think tank was James Woolsey, who was the CIA director at the time under Clinton. And Woolsey had a deep, deep, deep interest in UFOs and the secret space program. And he actually had got information from Stephen Greer, who runs the disclosure movement and has worked and liaisoned with a lot of military people and intelligence people. And Woolsey had a very hardcore focus on it. And he's in the CIA. Now, he also became one of Trump's advisors during this period of around September, October. And later, they kind of were trying to use him to set up Flynn, who was the national security advisor that got kicked out because he had contacts with Russia. So there, you know, there have been indications that Woolsey is still playing a weird role there, getting information and then turning around. But certainly the secret space program idea grew, and people were starting to get a lot of good researchers into it. Joseph Farrell is certainly one of my favorites on it. And there are technical people, too, like Mark McClandish, who go into the real hardcore details. But the thing is, you know, I hosted the conference in 2015 in Austin. And by that point, I think it had become an issue that people were curious enough about that it was becoming a topic that a number of researchers could get together on. And at about that time, and this happens in a number of areas, whenever the public is getting close, strange stories and strange people start popping up around topics like, you know, we're talking about the UFO topic. Or, you know, you can switch the focus and say something around money. You know, someone will come out and say, silver's going to 500. I'm using this method, and it'll discredit everybody. You know, so this is some kind of a deep state method of keeping information, you know, just kind of under the surface, keeping people's interests in check and controlling it. So by 2015, the secret space program, these whistleblowers had come out left and right, and they said, I'm in the secret space program. And I have all this intel, and I went to Mars, and we have a colony there, and a number of things along this line, which was really starting to discredit the real stories like McKinnon's story. And McKinnon himself was very unhappy about this development from his comments. And it started to lend itself towards a kind of a charlatan industry. And we saw a number of people come into it. And one of the crucial people who came out of that with his stories was Corey Good. And Corey Good and David Wilcock did a series of interviews, and they formed the show on Gaia TV. And it became, that's how the secret space program was starting to become known. In fact, the secret space program has a lot of good research behind it, has a lot of good details, incredible researchers. You know, Catherine Austin Fitz, who I mentioned previously, did a whole thing about the space economy.
Well, and that's really serious. We have trillions of dollars missing from our government economy, right?
Yes.
I mean, imagine what we would be if we had that trillions and trillions of dollars back to invest in our country. Now, if they're investing in some kind of secret space program that can help us as a country, isn't it something that we deserve to know, right?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, what is this all about? So it's a very serious topic when you start realizing how much money is missing. I mean, trillions.
Yes.
You know,
just trillions.
It would change the course of our country and history, this amount of money. It's very serious. And so when we get nefarious characters coming out and make essentially turning it into a goofball show, a clown act.
Right? Take note, everyone. Your favorite word is goofball. Get into
goofball.
The subject. I look forward to it.
Well, goofballs and clown act, right?
Yes.
The serious researchers get frustrated because they put their careers on the line. They're putting their reputation on the line, and they don't want to be associated with people that are not doing this, not moving forward and doing things seriously, because it wrecks their, you know, it's too much that they put on stake. Too much that
Absolutely.
They have at stake. Yeah. Including
Absolutely.
You and everyone else involved in that.
But, sure.
So you've come out and you've done a series on Corey Good and some of these actors that are making it look like a goofball clown act.
You said it all. I don't need to say anything else about it. I think that really sums it up quite well.
Well, can you explain what you've been covering and what it's all about? And I mean, there's some serious stuff that you've uncovered as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, the series is called New Age Deep State, and it's available on YouTube and at darkjournalist.com. And what I did was I was trying to track back, you know, there's so many things that have come out of the term New Age itself comes from a journal that was around the early 1900s. And there was a guy named A.R. Araj who covered these esoteric topics, and there were so many movements blossoming at the time, like the Theosophical Society, Rudolf Steiner's Anthroposophy. And what was happening was things were coming to America that were from, you know, Eastern yoga, meditation, a number of things. And a number of groups were springing up who had a kind of spirituality about it. And over time, these groups, which I think were very earnest and really made a big difference as a kind of a backlash against the scientific materialism that was going on at the time, what happened was they started to get infiltrated or imitated. And by the time that we get to the 1980s, there's the New Age movement. And the New Age movement was often cited as being infiltrated by intelligence sources who were interested in conducting experiments on what people would believe, how they could form groups, cult dynamics, and a number of things along this line. At the same time, you had all those people raising the consciousness, going into holistic things. We have all these, you know, even Whole Foods, right, which started off as Bread and Circus, is remarkable, if you think about it, how much the culture has kicked into it. So a lot of good things came out of the New Age, but at the same time, a number of cult-like influences got into it. And there would be stories that would come up when, you know, there'd be like a cult-type personality who would come on the circuit, and it would go on for a while. Then we'd start to hear things about behind the scenes, what was really going on, and the person would go down. And that's what happened over and over again. Now, certainly some of that's organic, but some of these New Age groups and the UFO groups got targeted and infiltrated. And it's a matter of public record that the Air Force intelligence infiltrated the UFO field over and over again to get them, throw them off the trail. And when you think about UFOs, you know, you don't have to think about it from an alien perspective necessarily. You can think about it as there's advanced technology being operated and witnessed by people. And therefore, what it represents is massive industry, because it would probably take a lot of money to build these things that do all these maneuvers. And then there's the off-world aspect, which is that somebody coming here to visit us and look us over. So there's those two different camps. But whatever the actual truth is, it's under such secrecy. They say it actually it's under a higher secrecy than nuclear power. So this is the nature of how important it is to intelligence groups to keep the situation quiet. So they send people into these fields, infiltrate it, change the story, change the narrative, discredit this person, discredit that person. So finally, everyone just wants to turn away and run in the other direction. Certainly, the secret space program, this is our period right now, 2017, where it's kind of make or break, because you have these infiltrators coming in and changing the narrative around the secret space program. So I decided to look into the backgrounds of who these people were and what their stories are, and there was almost nothing that was verifiable. And their stories were getting more and more elaborate. You know, this one guy was saying he was going to Antarctica and coming back with reports, and you know, there's all sorts of things that are involved with going to Antarctica. You know, you're going to need a pass, number one. And it's not just the kind of thing you can just go there and come back and talk on a TV show about it. So I thought the whole process was very unusual. And that's where I started to look into it. And we found out a number of things that you can see in the series, which really show us where this, you know, where these stories are coming from, and how opportunists can meet up with intelligence forces and get together and really, you know, exploit a field. And the opportunists will make money, and the intelligence agency will discredit the field. It's a formula that they've used over and over again.
So in this Corey Good thing, you think he's being backed by intelligence with characters that just want to take advantage and make money?
Well, I think here's the thing. Even if someone suspected, you know, Corey Good comes out and talks a lot of stuff. There's no evidence for any of it. Even he will admit that. There's no evidence. So we have to start to wonder, why is the story so promoted, you know, say over the story of Gary McKinnon, who actually, you know, the United States wants to put in prison for 70 years. There's a big difference there. So why this fluff story gets so much play in that community, I think, is because what they're looking to do is, you know, discredit the entire field. Now, I can't say that, for example, somebody like Good is an intel agent. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that when these people come out and they make these claims with no evidence, it's very easy for an intelligence service to take something like that and really use it. And I think that we're seeing a lot of exploitation in the field, so that now, instead of getting the solid research, like, you know, when I looked around at the conference in 2015, I had Linda Moulton Howe on my right, and Catherine Austin Fitz on my left, Joseph Farrell, you know, down the end, Jim Mars on the other side. You know, incredibly detailed. Farrell's an Oxford scholar. Linda Moulton Howe has been doing reporting for over 40 years. Catherine Austin Fitz is the former assistant housing secretary and the president of Solari. And Jim Mars is the author of Crossfire and a number of other best-selling books. That's impressive. You know, they've got good information. The public's going to learn about the secret space program.
But isn't Linda Moulton Howe an Emmy-winning Stanford graduate school?
Exactly.
I mean, keep going.
No,
I wanted to throw some of those things in there. Yeah.
Show isn't long enough for her resume, actually. She is incredible. And very interestingly, I think that this is just the nature of the thing. I think that when something comes up like this and you get opportunists coming in and saying, well, I was in this program, I was in that program, and there's no vetting and there's no evidence, when that stuff gets promoted, we have to look into it deeply. And that's why I did the New Age Deep State series, because I figure there's some kind of an operation going on there. And until we get the really hardcore data on it, these people shouldn't be believed at all. Now, as soon as I did the series, they threatened to sue me to do it. I guess that tells you a lot about where they're coming from, but I'm doing it anyway. I'm a dark journalist, I have to do it.
Because you're a journalist. Okay, yeah. Well, are there other nefarious things that you've seen out there fabricated that you could point to that people might, you know, maybe the flat earth, that's gaining a lot of traction.
Well, the flat earth is the ultimate meme to discredit the alternative community and alternative media. I mean, for that to get any traction is absurd, you know. I have one, you know, basic suggestion, which is buy a telescope, and that's the end of that, you know. Well, I think what will happen, though, can you imagine, though, you could say, well, this guy, he believes in flat earth. You know, that's the ultimate insult, right? You say, oh, boy, you know, the alternative media has to be completely stupid. Flat earth?
So yeah, if you want to look like a goofball, start promoting that.
Exactly. Well, we do have to talk about this openly, though, right? Because these are the angles which would make it very easy to discredit alternative media, because you have these things there. Now, what's great about the alternative media versus the mainstream media is a number of things get entertained, so you go outside the box. So if you can get into that field and get outside of the mainstream media box, but also take real research skills in there, I think that's the best of both worlds, because, you know, you're not going to get it in the mainstream media. They will lie flat out. You know, take the last election, for example. It was Clinton by a landslide all the way until she lost, you know, the Electoral College, completely decimated over, you know, like 80 to 90 electoral votes or something. So they say what their agenda is, you know. The excessive vaccine schedules, you know, well, they're paid by pharmaceutical companies to pump that up and create vaccine scares and all the rest of it. You know, I was reading one case where they were calling this person anti-vaxxer because they had 16 vaccinations instead of 44, you know. So it's not even at this point, you know, you have to be doing it. So we have to take a look at the role of these industries pressuring the news narrative. And I think once we get into that, we start to see, you know, we're looking at mainstream media that's manipulative. And then when you go into the alternative, there's a lot of misinformation. So there's a lot of sorting for an average person to do in the age of the internet. But I think there are opportunities here to get at a much bigger truth. And when we do get at those truths, the mainstream world has to follow along, or else they literally lose market share on it. And they can't.
Well, isn't this what people really want? I mean, let's face it. People know that the mainstream media is, you know, I always say they're incompetent. I don't know. They're either.
that's very polite.
they're either being paid off, or which might be a better way of saying that, you know, at least you're intelligent, but you're being paid off, but you're not moral, or you're incompetent. I mean,
yes.
Now let's look at Megyn Kelly's interview with Putin. It was painful to watch that.
Yes.
You know, when you're pretty educated, you've been really watching and learning and trying to figure out what's going on geopolitically. And some of these questions that she asked, it was embarrassing as an American. Luckily, Putin knows what they're all about, but she looked foolish, I think.
Yes.
What was your perspective on that?
Well, it's all hands on deck to create a phony Trump-Russia narrative. It has been since Clinton lost the election, because all of these powers in the deep state, which controls a lot of the media, and try to find me good people in the media that aren't connected with the Council on Foreign Relations, you can't. You can't, because if you say no to the Council on Foreign Relations, you won't get the good job. So there's a control weapon there. Bilderberg is the other one, you know. And this gets us into a whole mindset, because if you get into Bilderberg and the Davos crowd, you know, this is a very high echelon of power, but these are the publishers. And, you know, these are the control mechanisms that they employ. So when they get together and it's super secret and all the rest of it, well, everyone knows what the Bilderberg group is now, but even 10 years ago, it couldn't get covered in mainstream news because they take a vow of secrecy not to talk about it back then. You know, you have guys like Alex Jones who came out and so many others and, you know, just told us it was there, you know, with a blowhorn. And, you know, we get, you know, kind of to understand, oh, there is this group doing it. And now at Davos, you know, there's a fantastic example happening where Jeff Bezos is a regular Davos Bilderberg guy. And he's known as like the guy who will carry water for these different industries when they get together. So Bezos, he bought the Washington Post, and the Washington Post came up with the most ridiculous anti-Trump slurs I've ever seen in any newspaper anywhere. Now, they have a long history through Katherine Graham in the CIA. She was a CIA asset. That's on record, so it's not even someone's conspiracy. And Katherine Graham was the owner. And so they, you know, it's a CIA newspaper, the Washington Post. Now, when Bezos took over, almost immediately, and he spent $660 million to take it over, and it was failing, he gets a huge contract for CIA cloud computing. They give, it's basically a payback in public. If you buy this thing, we'll give you the money back with the cloud computing. I mean, it's undeniable. So these are the types of deals that go on at Bilderberg, at Davos. And there's a certain elite crowd there. I think that, you know, they're running the world as a monopoly. And this is the kind of thing, especially when you get to news, that you'll never get the truth if it becomes a monopoly the way they have it now.
Well, if the big money interests are controlling the media, they're only going to allow them to print things that they yeah. helps their agenda, right?
Exactly.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with people coming together and trying to make things better. You need people to come together and network and do these things.
Sure.
But with the world being more global, and you have a lot of really intelligent people, people are going to be questioning things, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's not good enough for a lot of professional people or people with a brain to see what the mass media puts out. And we know what's going on in Syria is not what they're telling us. We know what's going on in other countries isn't what they're telling us, because we're an international community now. And we're smart. We can question these things. So they need to get to a point where it's almost a running joke now when they just say things that just aren't true, and everybody, and so now you can't trust anything they say.
Yes.
Because they just lied so blatantly on something that we know is false because we saw it and we're smart enough to, we're not that dumb.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, they really think that just by repeating a certain thing over and over again, that they'll just wear you down. And that's a kind of a mind control technique that I think the media is good at. It's a subtle mind control technique. It's repetition. But like I was saying, you know, you say Trump, I say Russia. This is their method of associating things in someone's mind who's not really paying full attention, just getting kind of a feel for it. And I talk to people all the time who, I live in Boston, and there's a large liberal Democrat contingent here. And they watch MSNBC, and they're, oh, my God, they come to me, and they're like, oh, my God, you know, Trump is a fascist, and he's in collusion with Putin, and we have to impeach him. And none of this stuff's real, you know? I mean, there's no evidence for any of it. But,
it's so amazing they get away with that.
It is.
I mean, at some point, it's treasonous, right? They're committing treason.
It is. I 100% agree, because there's no factual basis for any of it. If you had a factual basis, you know, that went beyond some weird innuendo, then you could do it. But this is some of the thinnest stuff I've ever seen. And I think the media really showed their cards in the 2016 election. It was, we know best. We know what's going to work. You guys are toast. And they thought that they had Trump, I think, in that. And when the voters put him in, it's such a shockwave to the system and those elites, like we were talking about at Davos and Bilderberg. And I'm not saying that if someone has issues with Trump, I'm not saying that he's not making mistakes or that he has the greatest agenda. I do say, though, that he has spoken up and opened up the truth on a number of factors. And he does not seem to shy away from a fight. And that's the kind of attitude that we need when we're dealing with these people.
Well, and at some point, if all you're going to do is attack them all day long, then, you got to support them to a certain degree. Otherwise, you're hurting everybody. I mean, even Harvard came out.
He's a duly elected official.
Exactly. It's treason to do it to that degree. Now, we need to keep our public officials honest. But to do everything you can to take someone down is absolutely horrible when we have so many problems in this country.
Now, why are they doing it? It's not just a Republican-Democrat thing, because a lot of the Republicans assist at times, as we've seen, and they did everything to keep him out. Because Trump is like a bull in a china shop. You know, they cannot control where he's going to move. And if he makes certain moves, he can expose a lot of the corruption that's been going on institutionally in the government. And this is really what, you know, they're trying to figure out a way to do that. Now, it's fascinating, but we're talking about the media here, and this should be interesting. I was talking about how Professor Scott, a Berkeley professor, has written a number of important political books, coined the term the deep state. So Trump and his circle, because of their connection, I think, with Breitbart, and we know one of his biggest aides comes from Breitbart, he got into this term, the deep state, and he started to figure out what was going on, and instantly the newspapers started using the term deep state everywhere. And I was asking Professor Scott, is that strange to you? You know, you came up with this term, and it's always been this obscure thing in this research area, and now everyone's using it. And he said, well, you know, Daniel, their deep state's not my deep state. And the deep state that they're putting forward is just the small, miniaturized version. And it gets away from the real idea of the deep state. So they figured, you know, somewhere in the media halls, they figured, oh, this is dangerous. Trump is into the deep state. His circle's into the deep state. Let's go tell the public what the deep state is, our version.
Well, yeah, it's just people, bureaucrats that have been working at the DMV for a long time.
That's right. Yeah, it's angry bureaucrats that are over from 20 years ago. You know, it's pencil pushers that are in there. But what's interesting, though, I think with Scott in his version, and he studied it, you know, his first book studying the deep state is 1968. So he called it deep politics at the time, and it evolved into the deep state. But the idea is that there's a parallel system of power operating side by side with the public system of power. So if we have elected officials and law and order, the Supreme Court, and all that, that there's a second part that we can't see that runs parallel along. And the deep state would consist of intelligence agencies, Wall Street, money interests, big oil, things like that, aspects of the military-industrial complex, and, you know, drug running and a number of these different factors. And what would happen is once in a while, they have to enter into the public state to, you know, make a major change. So in history, he cites these deep events, which start with the Kennedy assassination, Watergate, Iran-Contra, and, Syria now. See, this is the thing. So if we start to understand these two parallel forms of power, then the media gets very nervous about what the public will discover. So they picked up Professor Scott's term and they ran all over the place with it, and you would see it everywhere. Deep state this, deep state that, and then they would be, you know, creating this kind of version of it. And then finally they said, you know, the deep state doesn't exist here. Only in other countries does that happen.
Yeah, in every other country except here.
Yeah, right. It was fascinating to watch.
That's why, to me, the money that's missing from our government is so important, because that's the money they wield and use for their purposes. It has to be, you know, because and the fact that we have trillions and trillions of dollars missing, and it's not the most critical topic that we're discussing in our media, and we don't have, you know, investigations going on, and it should be the most important thing that is happening in this country, tells you that there's something fundamentally wrong or weird.
Well, don't you know, it's such a more important thing to find out if a low-level Trump aide knew anything about the Russian television network. That's the real story.
That's what's so silly. You know, like Megyn Kelly gets up there and asks Putin, if I had Putin's ear and I could do an interview with him, I wouldn't be asking some of these silly questions. There's some really serious questions that we could be asking him that people want to hear, and you're up there wasting everyone's time asking these silly questions.
This is the fluff journalism that they do, and it's a kind of celebrity journalism. But I agree with you, it's an excellent opportunity missed. And I go back to what I started with, though. When Putin raised the idea that the intelligence agencies were trying to create tension with Russia and get around Trump, because Trump was operating and trying to get good relations with Russia, which, by the way, I think we should have for economic and other reasons. Yeah, I mean, they'll cite Russia as an incredible threat, right, in the deep state. The CIA comes forward and John McCain is like, Russia's the greatest enemy we ever had, you know. And he's really, you know, leaning into a kind of a senile perspective. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Meanwhile, you know, Russia's the worst thing on the planet and Saudi Arabia is our best friend.
I know. How does that add up? So getting into this idea of Russia as a threat, we can refer to David Stockman's work. Now, he goes all the way back as a Reagan official back on the budget there, 1980s or over 30 years. And he makes the point when we get into Russia that basically the entire industry of Russia could be summed up in the economy of New York City. This is what we're talking about in terms of scale. So certainly they're not a threat in that department. And in terms of arms, well, you know, this is kind of fascinating. But we spend in 2 weeks what they spend in a whole year on defense. So how much of a threat is Russia? Not a very big threat. Well, we need a nuclear enemy, if we'll go back to this. One of the things that I would say about this and where they're going is, you know, they look at Russia and they see a gigantic financial opportunity to modernize our nuclear arsenal. And if we can bully Russia, maybe we can get them into our digital currency, global digital currency system, and force them to take GMOs. They don't want to do that. So it's in our interest now, this aspect of the deep state. They're thinking to themselves, it's in our interest to destabilize Russia and cause severe issues there. Now, I guess what's funny about this and Putin's reference to the JFK assassination from 50 years ago is that having done their own investigation, they probably have things there in Russia that would prove very embarrassing. And I think that always there's diplomacy going on where he's saying, if you keep it up, I will show that there was CIA involvement in the Kennedy assassination. I think that's exactly what I heard when he mentioned JFK and said the CIA, it's largely known in America, the CIA had a role in the assassination. And they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what you've done in all of your journalism. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. We're going to have you back next week again.
Right.
And there's so much going on and you have so much going on. Right. But let's close up with, how can people reach you and see this work that you have been doing?
Well, great. Sarah, it's really great to be back with you. So I really appreciate it. I'm at darkjournalist.com. That's where my reports are. And also on YouTube, my YouTube channel has all my videos up there. And you know, you can also subscribe to Dark Journalist and get exclusive information, audio files and things along that line at darkjournalist.com. The New Age Deep State series, we're up to part 4 of 6, and that is a large-scale expose that's going on right now.
And I would recommend being a subscriber, because there's a lot of interesting things that you have, and it helps support your program and keep your stuff going.
It's the best, yeah, it's the best way to do it. And, you know, we keep it very affordable. It's basically something like $3 a month, or, you know, around $3.25. So I certainly, for the kind of information you'll get, it's definitely worth it. And it's the, you know, it's the kind of thing where the shows that we have coming up, Dr. Nick Begich is coming on to talk about DARPA next week. That's an exciting show, along with Dr. Joseph Farrell on Antarctica. And so he's got a lot. Yeah, he's got a lot to contribute there. He's been working on it, so that's going to be a fascinating show.
Well, I'm excited to have you back, and I'm going to have you back again next week. So thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll until next week.
Sarah, thanks so much. And your show is excellent. I'm always a regular listener, as you know.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Daniel. I will have him back next Monday. We'll continue and dive deeper into these topics. But I want to remind you to go to my website, sarahwestall.com, and look at those books and also sign up for my newsletter. I have that going out about every 1 week and a half, and you can see what all my shows are about. So for now, I hope you have an amazing day and an amazing week.